Well, it was at Clapgate, and again, the great man himself, Mr. Jepson, he was our deputy headmaster there, and it was simple, Rich, as I think I've mentioned it before. It was rugby league for the lads and netball for the girls, because Mr. Jepson would not have any other sport in there. You couldn't have the round ball, whether it was even at playtime for a knockabout, you could not have the round ball. But what, again, what I had as a young kid, I had speed, and quite simple. When I got the ball, I just ran around the opposition and I scored tries. And as an 8-year-old, I said to my mum and dad, you know, I want to be a professional rugby league player. And it was quite simple. You got to make the sacrifices, making sure you turn up for training on time, make sure that your boots are always clean before training, after training, and even before games. So as an 8-year-old, yeah, I wanted to be a rugby league player, and Mr. Jepson knew from a very, very early age that Leeds was my team. I can remember when Leeds won the Challenge Cup in 77 and 78, it's the only time I ever got my hands on the Challenge Cup, to be honest with you, was having photographs taken with the great Kevin Dick and John Holmes and John Atkinson. They came to the school as well. So yeah, it was in my blood at a very, very early age, and I say I had speed, and that's what I had. And then, you know, once I left Clapgate, went to Parkside High School, but then as 11-year-olds we all went to Hunslet Parkside, and then as you're developing a little bit more, you're getting a little bit more game-wise, I guess maybe the terminology was, and the new coach, and the coach was at Hunslet Parkside. The great thing for him was, he'd only seen us train a couple of times. He says, yeah, I want to coach this team. But he didn't coach anything out of us, because he knew the talent and what he had in that team. He had David Creese in there. But we had a great pack of forwards who were mobile. And they looked after us very well. But it was all about, again, letting the ball do the work and express yourself from there. And our school teacher, Roy Dougal, never took anything away from us. And at Clapgate, as I said last week, you know, In four years, we only had one try against us. We won everything, swept everything aside. We had one try against us. So that just tells you the quality of the side we had. But as an 8-year-old, yeah, I wanted to be a professional rugby league player. As I say, you've got to make all the right sacrifices and dedication from then. And went on to Hunslet Parkside High School. All the lads from Clapgate went to Parkside High School. We did exactly the same at Parkside. Swept everything aside, won all the trophies. But then once you get to 12, Rich, so you get noticed, then Hunslet Schoolboys, this is when your district starts going. So then Hunslet Schoolboys, Yorkshire Schoolboys, and to be honest with you, I didn't get picked for the first game in the Yorkshire Schoolboys, and then the second game I got picked as a fullback. And to be honest with you, I couldn't tackle. Tackling wasn't my game. And I've said it even when I was a professional. Tackling wasn't my game. And they picked me as a fullback. And my dad says, what have they picked you as a fullback for? Son? I said, I don't know. I said, but I'm just delighted to be playing. Anyway, we played at Warrington. We got beat by Lancashire. And Sean Wayne was in that team, by the way. And he was the best player, head and shoulders above anybody else at schoolboy level, was Sean, I can reassure you. And anyway, I played at fullback. And I think I saved about 3 or 4 tries by just putting my body where it shouldn't have gone. I didn't know how to tackle. I didn't have any technique because I was frightened to death at times. I just thought, well, if he's coming through, I'm going to have to try and tackle him anyway. And that's what I did. But that come of age a little bit, me, is where I think, well, yeah, I may have to get involved in a bit of tackling when I get back into the centre. So I learnt that a little bit. And then, and I say, Hunslet Schoolboys, and then once you get to high school, you move on to your 16-year-olds. Then again, that's when it's Hunslet School, then Yorkshire Schoolboys. So the Leeds districts came into it then. From Hunslet Parkside, and then that's where you get recognised. Leeds were chasing me as a 15-year-old, but again, as I was talking about with the amateur days, with the baller days, we weren't interested in signing professional. We wasn't interested in playing Colts Rugby League because we was playing Hunslet Parkside through the baller system, and we had opportunities to play for Yorkshire, and then the baller tour was coming up in 83. So I wanted to make sure that I did everything I wanted to do as an amateur before I went professional. But it was great days, you know. We met some great friends, even from school now, and all the lads who I've spoken to, you know, since Mr. Jepson passed away last week. You know, we're all gutted and we've all shed a tear for him, but his funeral's on the 20th of September, so we'll give him a great send-off. We'll give the great man that great send-off, because if it wasn't for him, as I mentioned last week, not just the way that he treated us as kids, as rugby league players, but as pupils. And it was quite simple: respect and discipline. And that's what we took into the game of when we played the sport as well. But yeah, as an 8-year-old, I wanted to be a rugby league player. I could run, I could score tries, but I'll tell you what, if I was spotted to be a defensive player, I'd have never signed professional because I couldn't tackle.
Well, that's the great thing. Whenever you go to a game and they have the mini games on beforehand, and usually they are that age group, aren't they? And there's no tactics there whatsoever. They just run with the ball, and there's nothing wrong with that because it's great.
Exactly. Do you know what, Rich? Right? If the philosophy of today in picking talent, I would never have been a professional rugby league player because I wouldn't have got selected. Because I wasn't the biggest, of kids. I was slight, but I could run. But I would not. Myself and Dave Creaser, right? We would not have got picked in any side because we want big, and we want strong. So this is what I'm saying about you. We've got to change our philosophy of what we are looking for in professional rugby league players and in sportsmen. You know, we would never ever have been a professional rugby league player if what's in place today would have been back in our days in the '70s. Because even when you look at other sports, like go back there, even in football, they're looking for the biggest and the biggest and the most strongest. Would George Best have been spotted? Would Franelli have this sort of thing been spotted? And even in our day, looking like a Roger Millward in Australia, like a Clive Churchill. And even you look at Robbie Burrows, the way Robbie is now, you know, going back to Robbie's days, you know, which would be easy to be involved in the game 20 years now. So go back into, if the same philosophy, would he have been picked as a professional league player? It's absolutely bananas, isn't it? It's bananas where the philosophy where we're looking now to bring to make people professional sportsmen. We're not robots. You've got talent, and let them express that talent. Don't take it away from them.
So obviously you've come through the schools and the amateur system. You said earlier that's part of the game that perhaps because clubs are picking up players so young. Is that why you enjoying playing amateur rugby league so much, and the system and of playing at for Yorkshire schools or whatever, that even though the club you supported offered you a contract, you'd rather have played and gone.
Playing amateur. We when they first came, because they used to, my brothers used to love it because Leeds, they gave me shoulder pads and they gave me boots and they gave me jock straps, and Leeds would get a bit annoyed with me because I'm a size, I was at 15, I think it was a size 9 or a size 10, and I'm an 11 now, to be honest with you, but every 2 or 3 weeks my foot size would be changing because my brothers wanted pairs of boots and Leeds got a little bit annoyed of it, you know. Oh no, what size boots are you normally? Anyway, so Leeds were chasing me at 15, and we kept saying to him, listen, there's this Barlow tour coming up in 2 years' time. This is what he's set his sights on. So he's not going to be playing, and he's not going to be signing. He's not going to be playing. He's not interested in playing Colts. Because what we said as a team at Unstick Parkside is that, you know, we're all sticking together. We want to go through all this together. We won the National. We won everything. We won the Yorkshire Cups. We won the National Cups. And that's what we achieved. And, from 15-year-olds, but then also as well, you know, other clubs started coming in. Even Wigan came in, Hunslet came in, Bramley came in, and Hull, to be honest with you, Hull came in, and they never even seen me play. They came to speak to me about signing for Hull on the recommendation of Robbie Devoto, the late great Gary Devoto's father, because Hull were chasing Divo. I think Divo had signed, but they said to, hey, listen, you want to be having a look at this in Schofield. Anyway, they came to come and watch me play for the Barlow side before we went to New Zealand at Dewsbury. We were playing Dewsbury's A team. Anyway, it was cancelled. So we goes home, and I get a knock on the door at about 10:15, and my mum and dad are in bed, and me and Adele, my wife at times, and obviously she's not here anymore, and we were just on the sofa just watching a bit of TV, and as you do as kids, Richie, and this knock goes on the door at 10:15. I said, who's this at this time? You could well imagine what me and Adele may have been doing. It may not have been watching television, but anyway, who's this on the door? So I goes to the door and I say, hello, who's this? And It's Mike Page from Hull FC's, Mike Page and Arthur Bunting. I went, who? It's Mike Page and Arthur Bunting. Right, okay. So I opens the door, just leaving to Adele. It says, people from Hull, you know, just get another chair. And I runs upstairs and knocks on the door, and Page and Domi, mum and dad. And dad, get up. Oh, why? What's wrong? It's Arthur Bunting and Mike Page from Hull. They're at the front door. What are they doing here? I said, I don't know, but come on, get up. So my dad gets up. So, well, let's Mr. Bunting and Mr. Page in. So anyway, so they said, you know, we've heard that you're a good player. We're coming coming to watch you tonight, but unfortunately we didn't see it because it was called up, but we'd like to sign you. So my dad just told me exactly the same. Well, you know, he's gone on this Barlow tour, he's not interested in signing. So, but the interesting factor from that was they never even seen me play. They took a recommendation of Devotee, Gary Devotee, Robert Devotee. But with Leeds, and I know Mr. Jepson, he took it the sole responsibility, the reason why I didn't sign for Leeds, because I always wanted to sign for Leeds. Leeds was my club, and I say when we got to the nearest time I ever got to the Challenge Cup, when they brought in 77 and 78 to school, the only time I ever got my hands on it and picked it up. But yeah, Mr. Jepson told the director, don't worry about Ewan Schofield, you know, he'll be signing for Leeds. When the time's right, he'll be signing for Leeds. And I went to Leeds a couple of times, Rich, and they took me and my parents. But it didn't feel right. You didn't feel as though you were wanted. But Leeds philosophy was always, and they'll tell you this, and I think even now, just a little bit small still, you should be privileged to be part of that club. You know, you should be that. We're asking you to become one of our professional players. You should be privileged there. But when we went to the game, there wasn't any sort of any feeling that you really were wanted. You know, it was just a matter of, you know, we want to sign you, and then we'll see what happens. It was different at Hull. When Arthur Bunting asked if I'd come over to train with the first team, my dad said, "Oh well, I can't see any problem with that." You know, well, yeah. Well, when would you like him to come over? Oh, we'd like him. We'd like him to come over next week if possible. So anyway, went over the Tuesday, and I tell you what, Rich. Went into the dressing room, and quite simple, when you get Steve Norton, the late Grave Topless, Trevor Skerritt, Phil Lowe, Kevin Arkin, Ronnie Warman, Lee Crooks, Paul Prendeville, and the Kiwi blokes all shaking their hands and saying, come on then, let's see how good you are. And then I went out there and receiving passes off Knocker and Crooks and scoring tries and touch and pass, and everybody's saying, boy, oh boy, when's he signing for this? It made you feel as though you'd been part of it for 2 years. And then they came back, Hull, Roy Wardby and Arthur Bunting. They came back into it and said, listen, you know, we want to sign you, and we know everybody's chasing you. And to be honest with you, I did sign when I shouldn't have done, but everything, we all got put in the safe and all this sort of thing. And I signed for Hull there. But the major reason I signed for, obviously, because there were quality side and there were the big boys. There were the big boys. I've just mentioned the names there, White. There were the big boys. But they made me feel as though I was part of that club and, you know, felt wanted. And that's the reason, and that's the reason why I went there. But Hull had never seen me play. They'd never seen me play. But I tell you what, I got in trouble from Unslip Park side, because we'd always said we would never play Colts for anybody. But I signed for Hull. And anyway, it was Christmas period. There were no games in the amateur game. So Hull said, oh, if you don't mind, you know, would you fancy coming over to play for us? And, you know, we just want to see what you're like as a player. And so my dad said, well, I can't see it being any harm. You know, nobody will know. We're out of Unslip and we're over at Hull. Anyway, so I went over and we played Rochdale. I had to play for 40 minutes. I scored a hat-trick first half. Scored a hat-trick. So Bunt says, right, I've seen enough. That'll do for me. So this is all supposed to be quiet. You know, it's all in the safe. It don't get announced. Anyway, so on the Monday, the Hull Daily Mail, Hull's new signing, Gary Scover from Unslip Parkside, made his debut for the Colts. He scored a hat-trick. Our coach at Unslip Parkside, Ron Tinker, bless his soul, Ron, he was from Hull. He played for OKR. He was from Hull. He's got family in Hull. What do they go and do when they see it there? Get on the phone to Ron, tells Ron, right, and then sends a copy over to him. I go to training on the Tuesday after Christmas, and anyway, it's called, they've had a team meeting, the Parkside lads, before it, and I'm the captain, by the way, of Funsit Parkside. So, but he's called a team meeting. Anyway, so I go to the dressing room, and they're all there, and literally steaming. So, hey, lads, why? What's wrong? Steaming. Ron Tinker, right, okay. Right, what's this? So he always appeared up there. I went, oh, right, well, you've seen it, you know. I played for Hull Colts over the Christmas period, you know, the interest in signing me, and, you know, we won't play, so I just felt, you know, it was okay. Well, you know the situation. Everybody said they're not going to play Colts, and we're suspending you for 2 weeks. So I went, you what? You're getting suspended for 2 weeks. Anyway, so I went, all right, okay, if that's... So I went out, went straight home, got home, I was about 10 to 7. My dad said, what's wrong with you? What are you doing back training? You start at half six. What? I've been suspended, Dad. You what? I've been suspended. What for? So I told him, went, right, let's get back down there. So he goes down there, pulls coach aside, Ron Tinker. So I said, oh, you've suspended him, have you? I said, right. I said, okay, then. He said, he's leaving. I said, what do you mean, Mrs. Govan, he's leaving? He said, he's leaving. Well, the big opposition to us was St. John Fisher at Dewsbury, and they were coached by John Maloney. And they had Derek Fawkes, late great Roy Powell, bless his soul, David Healy, and good quality side, and they were the second best team in Yorkshire apart from us. So my dad said he's leaving, he's going to St John Fisher's, you know, and then we'll see how good you are then when he goes there and he's played against you. Ron went, no, so he said leave it to me. So he called out lads off at training park and had another team meeting. Within half an hour I'd been reinstated to training, that one, if the suspension had finished. But yeah, they, you know, that they, the things what happened to you there. But the interesting factor is simple. From our amateur days, you know, we started playing together at Clapgates 9 years of age, and that friendship, even now when we see each other, that friendship and that respect and that loyalty, what we had, and we made a commitment to each other. And okay, I shouldn't have played for the Colts, but I was signing for this club and they wanted to watch me, and we felt as though because we weren't playing, it may have been okay, but they felt so strong about this bond, it wasn't. But then they felt so strong about this bond, if I was going to leave, which I would have done, by the way, and I'd gone to St John Fisher's and made it pretty hard for him. You know, they said, no, we're not having this. It's been a mistake. We'll forget it and we'll move on. And he was another great bloke, was Ron Tinker, you know, because we were all different sort of personalities from our forwards. You know, we had an hooker who was a nutcase in Tony Staniforth. Great hooker, by the way. Great. He played at Featherstone. Absolutely bonkers. Wayne Baldwinson, he was Billy Baldwinson, who played at Hunslet. His great uncle was Billy. Short in stature, 5'8", 5'10", but I tell you what, could he run? Could he tackle? Was he tough? And then we had a nutcase in the second row called Ricky Quarmby. I tell you what, he could run with the ball and score try, but I tell you what, if you wanted to mix it, he would mix it. So we had the right blend. So me and Dave Creaser, we were delighted. I was the centre, Creaser was the standoff. And they just used to protect us. But again, it was having that right balance. And from the fullback in Mark Gibson, you know, the way that he tackled people in his position and play. And now most of these players, this is what I'm saying about scouting systems today, Richie, right? How most of them players didn't get signed on, I just don't understand it, because they all could play and they could have played, all being professional rugby league players. But because it was changing a little bit, where they were just looking for size and power, they lost out. They lost out, and so did rugby league. So did rugby league. But, and I say, we with the black and whites, not seeing me play and signing me on the recommendation they voted, but one thing for sure, if it weren't for the black and whites, they wouldn't have put me on the world of rugby league from a point of view playing for club rugby league, but also to international, because, you know, I remember debut as an 18-year-old against France, which was the worst rugby league game I've ever played in, to be honest with you. I had a nightmare of a game. But yeah, with the black and whites and half a bunch of them and spotting that bit of talent.
So you're at Hull. They've never seen you play. What did the spectators make of you the first time you walked out?
I played in a friendly against Carlisle, and he was playing. Steve Furnish was playing for Carlisle then. They were coached by the late great John Atkinson. Well, he's still with us. John, he's not very well. John Atkinson with a coach. Then a few ex players in there, and I think Maurice Lucas was playing for Sean Miller, who was a hooker. And made my debut. And I scored two tries, and I scored the length of the field try, and the way that they took to me was untrue. And what was fascinating about it was the senior players as well, the way they were, and not just feeling good about scoring the try, but the way they was talking about it, just saying, we haven't seen no like this, you know. But he's supposed to be in the centre, but he's not, is he? Where's he got this from? You know, every time I want to pass the ball, there's not somebody there, but this kid's everywhere. How has he got this? But it was just something what my dad said to me, you know, don't you wait for the ball, let the ball, you know, don't let the ball just come, you go looking for it if it's not good. That's what I did. And, you know, Steve Norton and Mick Crane just loved passing the ball, and when they were like that, they were this spotty face 18, you know, 12 stone kid with a bit of black hair on his head, but the size calling for the ball all the time. So yeah, they took to me very well. And but you know what was very, very fascinating for me was when I came into the dressing room, the vice chairman, Peter Darley, is giving out his brown envelopes, because it was only friendly, you know, to give his brown envelopes. And what's this for? And Dave Topler said, go on, it's your match fee for today. I went, a match fee? What do you mean a match? Well, you get paid for playing a friendly. And he opened it, it was £25. I thought all my Christmases had come on one street. We're getting paid for playing a friendly, and we got £25 for it. Scored two tries. So yeah, it was a good start. It was a good start.
£25, that's
the money getting paid. Well, 1983 as well, Rich, so it's, you know, a bit of money there. And I hope nobody from the tax office is there. 1983, interest on £25, what would that be nowadays? But yeah, it was a real eye-opener. And also, too, the biggest eye-opener was, you talk about preparation in today's game, and I'm sat in the dressing room, and literally, you know, a bit intimidated in there. And, you know, when you're seeing what Mr. Skirrick does, and then what Mr. Toplett does, and Mr. Crooks, and then you see Mick Crane just sat on his chair and just having a couple of fags and just sat there and doesn't put his kit on until 15 minutes before, and then Steve Norton, you know, supping half a bottle of sherry and this sort of thing. It was a real eye-opener, and I'm thinking, boy, oh boy, this is going to be great for the next... If I can last 15 years being a professional sportsman like this and seeing these sort of characters, it was a great learning curve, it was. And again, and the great man himself in Arthur Bunting, you know, when I talk about... coaches, not coaching where, because Arthur Bunting, you know, and the four great coaches who I played under, who was huge for my career, and I say in Arthur Bunting, David Ward, Malcolm Reilly, and Frank Stanton, they never taught me how to catch, pass, tackle, and support. They never said to me, Scoey, you stop going for interceptions. Don't be supporting in the middle of the field. Start in the right centre. No, they don't be looking at the chipping over the top. They never took anything away from my game, but they never taught me how to catch pass tackles, because at the end of the day, I was a professional league player. They shouldn't have to learn that, should they? But the great Arthur Bunting wasn't coaching with him. It was all about my management. And when I'm talking about the characters in that whole dressing room and the big names and the big egos, that's all I had to do. But I can reassure you, Rich, when any of the big boys needed to be telling and needed to be, put in line... He didn't shy away from it. He didn't shy away from it one little bit, and that's why he got the success what he did.
Now, I'm not saying you've got an ego, Gary. I'm not going to say that now.
Oh, maybe a little bit.
You have to do to.
Of course, you do. You have to.
It's not
being big-headed, or it's not being overconfident or this sort of thing. But yeah, you've got to do, and also as well, Rich, right? When I go around all these grounds now, you know, working, you know, radio, and the respect what I get from, I would have said talent, and I said to Mark Wilson on Friday night, when we was over there, and I said, Alan's fan said to me, he says, "Oh, hello, Mr. Schofield, you okay?" I said, "I'm fine." I said, and he just quite simply said to me, "Oh, I've called you some names. I've called you some names." But that's out of respect.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And that's what you get. And yeah, you've got to, because, and I say, we talk about having egos. I'm proud of what I've achieved. Because if somebody had said to me, Richie, right, when Hull came to sign me and they said, "We've heard that to you, you're a good rugby league player, you know, we want to sign you," right? Even before I put pen to paper, if somebody would have said to me, Before it all started, right, and I'd played over 500 first-team games, I'd played for my country 46 times, the same as the great late Mick Sullivan. If I'd gone on four Great Britain tours, if I'd captained Great Britain 13 times, and now I'm in the Hall of Fame, I've won the Golden Boot, I've got the OB, and I've won the Man of Steel. If somebody would have said to me before it all started, and I says, like I say to Matt Wilson, "You're bonkers. You're absolutely bonkers. It's not going to happen." But it has, Richie. So the reason why, yeah, we have our own egos is because we're proud. You know, we're proud of what we've achieved. You know, and I get a lot of stick a little bit, you know, from a point of view where I didn't win any trophies. But by the way, I'll answer that in a way, well, nobody else did in our time, because Wigan won it all, didn't they? Who else from, I won the Yorkshire Cup. But in them days, we were pretty big, but, you know, it's not a major, is it? You know, but nobody else did, because we all know Wigan's dominance. Nobody else won any trophies in them days, because it was quite simple. They had 17 internationals playing, and everybody else didn't have that sort of quality. But from a learning curve from me to from playing at school, going through my amateur days, and then going into that whole dressing room for the first time on that cold Tuesday night at Melton training, I tell you what, it makes you grow up very, very quickly, because it's quite simple. If you don't fit in straight away and grow up pretty quickly, grow some crystals very, very quickly, I tell you what, you'll get left behind.
Well, that's what I was going to ask next. Obviously, in a dressing room full of seasoned professionals, great players, and obviously players who represented their countries as well, and so on and so forth. Did it take you long to fit in, so to speak?
Not really, because the players took to myself and Gary Devoto. We both got into the first team straight away. But also as well, what's changed today and what was it in them days? We was playing first team football for Hull straight away in August. Bert Rich, right? The only time we could go in the first team dressing room, was on match days. On training nights, we had to go into the A team dressing room. We had to earn the right to change with the big boys on Tuesdays, Thursdays and Saturday mornings. The only time we saw the big boys on Tuesdays, Thursdays and Saturday mornings was Mr. Bunting blew the whistle, and then it was out on the training park. We couldn't go into the first team dressing room until match days. We'd made his debut in August, and it wasn't until the following February until Mr. Bunting came to me and Devo into the 18 dressing room and said, "Right, come on, you two, you've deserved it now, you could come and get changed in the first team. Just, again, that's a thing that should be brought in today. Everybody, it's all given too easy for him, you know, and and when, once we got into that on the training, we thought, then, yeah, we've made it. This is where we do feel part of it now, because this is where we are every Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, and on a match days on a Sunday, we're here with the big boys.
Which, in the early part of it, which grounds gave you the most stick as a player?
Well, lucky I wasn't bad, obviously, for obvious reasons. Leeds fans, because obviously we'd be literally, you know, should have signed for Leeds and coming from this area. The South Stand, I guess, you know, why didn't you sign for us, do you know what I'm saying? But the ones I used to try and intimidate you a little bit, because you were pretty close, Lee was one, Central Park, but also two down at Cass, and they let you know a little bit, you know, what you do down here, you don't have to be out of nappies, never mind coming down here playing against the likes of John Joyner and Gary Hyde and all this, and Malcolm really was still around then, you know what I mean? So, but it was quite intimidating, but still, you feel as though it's respectful for what they're saying about you, because, you know, you're not a bad little player and all this sort of thing, so it's a respect what the opposition had for you.
First time you pull on the Great Britain shirt, what are the feelings going through?
Unbelievable, to be honest with you, because it was my first season, and to be honest with you, I got picked for the under-24s. I got picked for the under-24s in October. I don't remember my debut against Warrington in August. And by the way, that was a nightmare as well, to be honest with you. I was absolutely hopeless. Ronnie Dwayne, you know, absolutely knocked hell out of me. We drew 22 apiece. It was at the Boulevard. But Ronnie Dwayne gave me a great introduction to Preston Rugby League, and he absolutely knocked 7 bells out of me. And it wasn't very nice, to be honest with you. And I thought to myself, have I got about 10 or 15 years of this where people just want to knock hell out of you? But anyway,
it's...
Of course he does, and you got to learn the hard way, and you've got to find out pretty quickly. But yeah, when I got picked for the under-24s and for my debut, then I scored a try on the debut. I was on the bench there, but under-24s had a quality side. It consisted of, you know, Ellery and Crooksy and Andy Goodway and Terry Flanagan and Ray Aston and Mike O'Neill and Joe Lydon, you know, so that was a good side. But then I played for the Colts in January, captain the Colts, and we beat France, I think, about 26-12 over there. And then I was in camp with the Colts, then all of a sudden the call came through, Scully, you've been called up to the senior side, you're playing against France on Friday night, so unfortunately you've got to leave us. And absolutely delighted. And and again, Frankie Myler, legend of the game is Frank, you know, when he shook me and he says, well, you know, it's all down to you now, son, you've been picked on form, we'll see what they can do. And at the end of the year, there was a tour in 84. Boy, oh boy, Rich, my debut was an absolute nightmare. On my wing was John Basnett, and at the time we were joint try scorers. We had 22 tries apiece. Well, if I was going to get half an opportunity, I didn't pass a ball to wingers anyway, so he was never going to get a pass from me, certainly if I'm making my test debut. And secondly, you know, to go ahead from me in the try scoring charge, I guess being selfish, but if I'm honest with you, my test debut was a nightmare and an absolute stinker. It was the worst game of rugby league I've ever played in. We beat France 10-0. It was 5 penalty kicks on David Hobbs. It was an awful game, awful night. And to be honest with you, I thought, well, you know, he's given my debut, I'm not going to play test football for maybe another 2 or 3 years yet. Because there's a bit of quality around at the time. And I said there was Ronnie Dwayne, Roy Haggerty, Joe Lydon, you know, so we're quality centres in there anyway. So, but fair credit to Frank. After the game, he just quite simply said to me, listen, Scoy, it's not been the best of debuts for you. He said, but keep playing how you're playing, and then we'll see what happens. But, you know, and then the season, I finished up top try scorer, 38 tries, and they took the chance on me and took me away as the youngest Great Britain ever tourist to Australia.
Is that why it amuses you? We heard James Webster earlier saying about the young players coming through at Hull that 20 games a season.
Rubbish.
And I know I know people say it's a different era and the game's changed and this and that and the other, but obviously you come through, you're playing internationally in your first season, it must frustrate you somewhat that people don't see it the way you do from
my experience. But also as well, Rich, you know, we know the old saying, you know, if you're good enough, you know, you're old enough, or is it if you're old enough, you're good at whichever terminology it is. Something could you ever, or can you now ever think that An 18-year-old's going to make his international debut. Do you think England would ever pick an 18-year-old to play?
He's probably not given his first-grade debut for his club yet.
You know, so I find it astonishing. And let's not forget, and when we went away and toured in 84, I was 18, Joe Lydon was 19, I think Andy Gregory was just 20, Elry might have been the same, Lee Crooks was the same from there. So, you know, the talent's from there and they're good enough. And could you honestly see today, you know, an 18-year-old, and by the way, I made my debut for Hull in August, played for the 24s, played for the Colts, made my test debut. We played in Yorkshire Cup finals, I think we played in the Regal Trophy final that year. So in my first season, I think I played about 40 games. I wasn't tired as an 18-year-old, I could have done another 40 games. do you know what I'm saying here? And I find it laughable when we say now, because when you're a sportsman, it doesn't matter what sport you are involved with, you just want to play. You don't want to be arrested. You don't want to be arrested. And the way that the game is now, all the rehabilitation, won't be, because, like, let's not forget, nowadays, you know, we didn't have, because we didn't know all the sports science, is what they say, you know, the sports science wasn't there. And if you had any injuries, obviously it was an ice pack on there and, you know, a bit of spray and all this sort of thing, and a bit of bandage on this sort of thing. So we didn't have all the sports science. But for what they're saying nowadays in, you know, to play 20 games as an 18, 19-year-old, you know, it's too much. I find it absolutely laughable. Laughable. Because let's not forget here, Richie, in our day, right, you could have been playing for the A-team on a Thursday night. You impressed in the A-team. You were putting pressure on the first-team player there. So if he wasn't realistically playing, you could have been playing twice a week, even then. You never felt tired. You just, that's what you wanted to do. It was your job. And that's what you wanted to do, to make an impression for yourself.
You mentioned touring there. So your first tour with all those young, up for it talent ready to break their way through the international scene, that must have been a very exciting time.
It was, as I say, but also he's a bit of a jolly boy as well, to be honest with you, because we had some experienced players on there, i.e., and they won't mind me saying, Mick Adams and John Jordan and Mike Smith and Keith Rain and Hobbsy, you know, they thought, well, it's going to be my last tour, I remember my first tour, so we're going to enjoy it. So he was a great jolly boy, Rich, to be honest with you. And I just followed, I were like a little sheep, I just followed whatever they did. You know, if they drunk 20 schooners, I sucked 20 schooners, if they eat McDonald's, I would, you know, he was a great, it was a great learning curve. And I'd say, young captain, well, Trevor Skinner was named as captain, but he had to pull out of injury. Len Casey then was picked as captain, but I think he got banned for 6 months by, did he take his team off, or did he batter Bradford Northern? Anyway, Len, because of, so we picked Nobby as a young captain, and I say, but the young stars from there, I say, I went on it, Ellery went on it, Gregory went on it, Lydon went on it, Andy Goodway went on it, young Lee Crooks, Desi Drummond. So yeah, we wanted to make a name for ourselves. But the great thing about it, for, you know, we're representing our country, we're in the best hotel, the Sheraton Wentworth, and but do you know what, Rich? We was only on a bed and breakfast basis. Bed and breakfast basis, believe this or not, as a national team. So after training,
that's believable.
After training at 3 o'clock, you know. By the way, it's the first time they'd ever took a conditioner on tour, and we took Rod McKenzie from Carnegie. So we was training 3 times a day, 7, 10, and 3. So after 3 o'clock, we get back to the hotel about 4:15. So we was all hungry. So up the road were the New South Wales Leeds Club. So they used to put a nice, for $5, a nice prawn cocktail starter soup and a nice steak salad. So for $5, well, yeah, we'll have some of this. But we didn't have any curfews, we didn't have any team meetings. So from 5 o'clock until we get in about 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning, it was just on the lash, and, you know, just enjoying ourselves. But I tell you what, though, it was a great learning curve for all these young lads. But when you looked at the test score lines, we didn't get embarrassed. Because we started putting Great Britain on the map then, and fair credit to Frank, you know, he wasn't the dictator and all this sort of, and Dick Gemmell, well, Dick were a joke, to be honest with you, but Frank, he's my management at times, it was okay. But when you look at the test scores, I think we got beat 23-6, 18-6 and 25-6. So to say we wasn't maybe the best of size, we didn't get embarrassed. And as I say, the way that we enjoyed ourselves off the field, you know, as I say, it was just a jolly boys out. It was a great learning curve. But it was a tour that put me certainly on the international map, and I scored the best try that I've ever scored in my career in the second test at Brisbane, and got voted the player of the tour. And then after that, it was the great Frank Stanton. He picked me up and took me to Balmain the year after. But it was a great tour, and as I say, in the friendships, what I've got, I run with Joe Lydon, you know, until I came home. I did a stress fracture in New Zealand, but I run with Joseph. But it's a friendship's what you get for the rest of your life, and me and Joseph to this day, you know, we reminisce and talk about the old stories of the tour.
Hey, Matt Wilson's ringing me. I don't know what the problem is. He doesn't realise we've just been talking. What amuses me is, was it the last World Cup when England banned four players for going out drinking before? Mm. You'd have had no players. You'd have had no squad.
Oh no, Richie. One great story. You know, we all know. And it doesn't mind it because we all tell it from the tour anyway. So, my great mate Crooksy, and we'd been out. It was a day off. One of many days off we had actually. To be honest, we took us out as a squad. Anyway, we get back on the coach around about 7 o'clock at night, and we'd been in this place, and we'd had a good drink. To be honest, we had. And Crooksy gets back on the bus, and he's got, two cans of twoies in his hand. I've got a couple, and all the other lads anyway. So we're on the back of the bus, and Crooksy's on back of the bus. And Frank gets on, and Dick Gemmell. And Frank can see we're all worse for wear. And he just said, you know what, I didn't really want to do this today, but I just thought I'd let you off the leash a little bit. And, you know, you've all been pretty good, you've all been pretty professional, but I thought I'd let you off the leash. And the way that I've seen you all come back on this bus, you know, I think I've made a mistake. And then he takes a look at Crooksy on the back of the bus, and he just says, look at you, Lee Crooks, look at you. Nothing's changed, has it? You're only 19 years of age, and you've got two cans in your hand. And look, you've had a good drink, as he's a look. You've still got two cans in your hand. And he just stands up, Lee, and he gets his two cans out. He just says, yeah, Frank, I've got a drink problem. I've only got one mouth. And we all just burst out laughing. Frank had a bit of a smile, sat down, and just said to the bus driver, come on, driver, let's get back to the hotel. But that was a good, the spirit what we had a little bit, yeah. Spirit. And he's still walking around with two cans in his hand, by the way, his Crooks, after 1984. But it was a great learning curve.
You went back to Australia to play, which is must have been a great thrill, and as a young player to be given that responsibility as well, quite a feather in your cap.
Oh, without a doubt. And as I say, and certainly when the team itself is coached by the Australian coach, Frank Stanton. You know, he'd seen certainly something in me on the tour in 1984, but that came again by chance, and maybe a bit of luck, Rich, to be honest with you, because in that 85 season, we'd signed Peter Serling from Parramatta, and Parramatta wanted me to go play for them, and Hull wanted me to go to Parramatta because obviously the relationship what they had with Parramatta and certainly Stirlo, they wanted to keep that relationship going. But Parramatta said to me that they wanted me to play in reserve grade, which I said, well, not a chance, you know, I'm too good for reserve grade. And Balmain got in contact with, again, the late great David Toppas, who'd have been associated with Balmain. I think he played with Balmain back in 1977. So Keith Barnes, who was the chief executive, said to Toppo, would I be interested in coming to Balmain? And, you know, could he contact me? So Keith contacted me, said, well, you know, we're an up-and-coming side, we've got a good young side coming through, and they did, because they had Wayne Pearce, Benny Elias, Paul Sirenan, Steve Roach, Gary Jack, and a load of young Scott Gale. I remember Scott Gale, he played over here for Hull, Gary Bridges at six, Ross Collin, who just made his debut for Australia. So they're a good young coming side, and in the test coach of Frank Stanton, and I had no hesitation of joining Balmain, and really enjoyed it. And again, the big plus for me was quite simple, Rich. When I first got introduced to Frank when I arrived in Balmain the following season, quite simple, you know, I don't need to teach you how to catch, pass, tackle and support. You're here to score as tries, you've got a free roll. And it was music to my ears, and I ended up being the top try scorer for the Tigers that year. Great playing. But the reason why it was a success, not just because myself I wanted to make it a success out there, but I jumped into the Australian lifestyle straight away, you know, and there's no point in when you get there, we don't normally train like this at Hull, and we don't normally do this in England, and, you know, you've got to get into their lifestyle straight away, you've got to get into what they want you to do straight away, and that's exactly what I did. But I must admit, though, to be honest with you, I didn't think it was really going to last too long, because the long flight out from there, and it's the first time Adele had been away, really, from her mum and dad we're going for 5 months, and we'd done the long journey over, and Keith Barnes picked us up at the airport, the Sydney airport. We got there about 7:30 in the morning. Gets through customs about 8:30. Keith picks us up, takes us to the hotel, gets in about 9:15. And Keith said, Scotty, I'm going to be back for you in 45 minutes. We've called a special training session for you. We're playing Canberra tomorrow, so I'll be back for you in 45 minutes. So Keith leaves us. We get into the hotel room, and Adele just bursts out crying. I want to go home. I want to go home. I don't like it. I don't like it. And I thought, listen, love, you know, it's been a long journey. I'm tired. I've got to go training. I've got to make an impression. You know, we'll have a chat. We'll have a chat when I get back, you know. Oh, I don't like it. We're going home. I thought, oh, yes, I need this sort of pressure as it is. Anyway, so goes to training, comes back to training. We have a bit of a chat. And so I said, listen, you know, you just can't be like this. You know, give it a month's time. We'll see what happens. And you know what? When she met the girls the day after, going down to Canberra, got on the bus from there, they welcomed her with open arms, made her feel at home, made her feel comfortable, put that smile on her face, which took a hell of a lot of pressure on myself, because it's like anybody will tell you, you know, if the missus is happy, then you're happy. Get on with the job and the job of work, what you're supposed to do, and it made it a lot easier for myself. But the pressure was on straight away. She didn't like it straight away, but, you know, the player's wife, certainly Pierce's wife, because he was a captain, Terry Pierce, you know, she took it. Sorry, Catherine. Well, all the girls did, and made her feel at home, made her feel one of them, and it made the job hell of a lot easier.
No, there's never any pressure. Never any pressure. that's all we learned this week from Sean Wayne. There's no pressure.
Wolfie, for sure, when you go play out in Australia. When you go there, you know, being there is, you know, for a bit of holiday. But when you go there as a sportsman, oh boy, that hatred, that is a hatred there, and also as well from the Balmain fans, because they don't know what they're getting. You know, they don't know what they're getting there. And now I was only 19 and just obviously been the professional game for just. That was my second season, you know, when I came to Balmain. And so, you know, their expectancy, they don't really know what they're getting, but they took to me straight away. The day after when I arrived, I made an half decent day before reserve grade at Canberra, played for 20 minutes in the first grade, and then the week after, I played against my old mucker Peter Sterling against Parramatta at Leichhardt Oval. We won 17-4. I took an interception off Sterling, and it was happy days. And I can tell you now, Sterling's not forgiven me ever from there. But again, from a young kid, when Sterling came to Hull in 84, I learned so much off him, the way he read the game, the way he plotted around the field. And the reason why I took an interception off Sterlo, one of his main plays was creating a 3-on-2 down on the right hand side, or whichever, the left hand side or the right hand side. And it was about 9 minutes to go, and he created this 3-on-2 with himself, and he had his brother-in-law outside, John Muggleton, and then the wing, I think he was either Hunt or Eric Grove on the right hand side. So he created this 3-on-2 with myself and Russ Gartner. But what I knew what Sterling would do is exactly what he'd do. He would pass the ball. But what it was, Sterling knew I'd be going for the intercept. So why he didn't go for the dummy, I don't really know. But I knew that he would pass this ball. So I took the intercept off in 35 metres out, went under the H's and won the game for Balmain, and they took to me straight away. Only took him a week from there. But the friendship I have with Peter, you know, he's still to this day, he's very, very respectful. And I remind him of it all the time. I think that's why he's lost all his hair, to be honest with you. Me pestering him.
Why are we not surprised that he might even remind him all the time? We're at the Balmain Tigers. You've just taken this interception from Peter Sterling. Everything's great. Was there any down points in Australia? It seems that at the moment, your career seems to be just going up and up and up and up and up.
Yeah, no, to be honest with you, Rich. No. Outstanding season with Balmain, and then the signing for the second season. I finished at the top try scorer for them. He scored 13 tries. And did I say no? But also, at the same time, Manly came in for me. And And I re-signed for Balmain because obviously there was an up-and-coming side. We just missed out. Excuse me. We just missed out on the semi-finals, and the potential was there. But Manly came in for me, and they offered me $30,000 more than what Balmain did. I was on $20,000 at the Balmain at that time, but the Balmain had given me the opportunity, and the loyalty was a big thing for me there. They gave me opportunity, so I said to Manly, "No, I'm staying here," even though they offered me two and a half times as much. And the second season went even better, to be honest with you. The second season at Hull, if I'm honest with you, did go as well as what it could have, because you know the second season everybody finds you out there. I think I only scored 15 tries in my second season. So, but the second season at Balmain, it got even better, to be honest with you, because again, you know, Frankie never changed anything what I did. We won the National Panasonic Cup, the midweek cup competition. So yeah, I did manage to win a major trophy. Actually, I did manage to get a major medal. And and then we got to the game just before the grand final. Before we got knocked out by Canterbury, the referee Mick Stone disallowed a perfectly try for myself. He said it was a forward pass, and it was never a forward pass. And since we found out Mick Stone was a big Canterbury Bankstown supporter, and he was a referee, so obviously there was talk about, as we all know, what the situation was there. So the second season, it was even better, because I finished up the top try scorer again, not just for Balmain, but the first and only Englishman to finish the top try scorer in the NRL, which I'm very, very proud of, to be honest with you. But we had a great side, you know, we had a fantastic side, and the coach again in Frank Stanton, just, you know, letting the lads express themselves. But the pack of forwards we had, we all know what Steve Roach was like, you know. But Benny Elias is the best hooker, you know, I've ever, well, I'll just give it to Cameron Smith, because Cameron's maybe kicking game a little bit better than Benny's. Benny wouldn't agree with that, to be honest with you. But yeah, what a hooker he was. And big Kerry Emsley, he was the other front row. He played at Wigan, and then in the back row, Big Ciro, well, what a mountain of a man he was. Great. David Brooks in the back row, he played at Hull, he came over here. And Wayne Pearce, a great Wayne Pearce that was forward. And yeah, we had a great side, and yeah, they just created opportunities. But again, I didn't score tries in the centre. I went looking for the ball, and they couldn't believe that somebody could. If any, they were looking to pass the ball, and this Englishman would be on the side of him, and taking the ball off him and scoring tries. So he just got better, to be honest with you.
And yep. Then now the West Tigers, of course, having merged, and Robbie Farrar's leaving them at the end of the season.
But I must say, then I went out for the third year in 87, and then that's where it went down, to be honest with you, because Frankie had left. And this is what I get with from a coaching point of view. And then they took on a guy called Bill Anderson. Well, Bill Anderson, he'd been the TV pundit for Channel 10 out there. You know, there's the 7, 10 and 9. Anyway, so Balmain, for whatever reason, they gave him the head coaching job there, and he was a typical school teacher. And Crooksie had signed for us as well at the same year in 1987. And it was all off the blackboard. You can't do this, you can't do that. You've got to play from this, you've got to play from there. And the enjoyment had gone. The enjoyment was absolute rubbish. Training was pathetic, treated like schoolboys, talking down to, at times, you know, belittled, because we tried exactly, we were doing what we should have been doing, like we did under Frank. He changed all that. And it was a very, very poor season, not just for Balmain, but myself. I think I've scored 4 tries that season, due to, realistically, the coach taking away from us what we was good at, and we wanted to be something else, and we just couldn't do it.
Whenever you're in Balmain, do you have to buy a beer, or do they still remember your exploits?
Oh, well, when I went over there, when myself and Harry got inducted to Balmain's Hall of Fame in 2012. To be honest with you, Rich, I was glad I come home after 10 days, because my kidneys and my back was hurting because of far too many twoies and schooners. But and if I'm honest with you again, and I've said it before, the amount of respect we get out in Australia, we get it far more respect in Australia than what we do over here, and I find that very, very disappointing, to be honest with you. The way they look after their history, and I'm not about financially, not for jobs, but I'm on about the respect what they give them. You know, it's overwhelming, absolutely overwhelming. And when me and Ellery got inducted in 2012, and the sold out, I think there was around 520 people there. And bearing in mind, Rich, this is for 2 English guys. This is for 2 English guys. And they told us they could have sold it out 3 times over. So that just shows you the respect they give for... Gareth Ellis was there at the time. But the respect they give for all the English guys who have played, even way before me and Ellery went out, and Lee Crooks went out there in 85, when you look at, you know, the way that Steve... Malcolm Reilly and Steve Norton and David Topless and Brian Lockwood and Gary Stevens and David Bolton, you know, and Dick Woodart, you know, they absolutely love them and they respect what they have for it. And even from our era, you know, myself and Ellery and Martin went out there, Joe Lydon, Lee Crooks, Derek Fox, Des Drummond, Andy Gregory, Hampo, you know, they can't do enough for you when you get out there. But I must say, after 10 days, with all the reminiscing what I did, I was glad to get back on the 747 and take a break for 24 hours.
Just 24 hours, that's it. Obviously, we'll go back to Hull now. You mentioned the year a couple of times, 1985, and everyone remembers that great final. Was that a frustrating time, not being on the bench for that final?
Oh, yeah, very frustrating. Disappointing as well. It goes down as the biggest disappointment because I felt as though, okay, it wasn't as good as the fifth season what I had, but I felt as though I justified my position. We played Widnes in the quarter final. We drew 6 apiece. I scored the try in that game to get the draw, and then we went to Norton Park the Wednesday after. Yeah, bearing in mind there were replays then, so we did play, and we managed to win 19-12. I scored a try, kicked 3 goals. We had the semi final, and I wouldn't say I played well, and that went to a replay as well against Castleford. I wouldn't say I played that well, but I felt as though throughout the season, and certainly in the Challenge Cup games, I justified a selection. James Luluai, James had been out for 6 weeks, he dislocated his shoulder, but he made himself available. He had a fitness test on the Thursday lunchtime, made himself available Thursday, and then Arthur told me after tea on the Thursday night that I was being dropped and I was on the bench. So yeah, it was a huge disappointment. But still, you know, it's got to be accepted. I wouldn't say I took it nicely. I guess I sulked. Yeah, I did. So I didn't sulk when I got on the pitch, but yeah, I sulked a little bit. But it's a learning curve. It's quite simple, you know. You do get a little bit of setbacks, but then you've got to move on. You've got to again, and you know, grow yourself some crystals and say, right, okay, then this may be a little bit of a setback there, but I'm going to prove people wrong.
Well, I guess that's the same for the players who missed out for Hull this year, Lee Manfredatta.
Absolutely.
If you didn't sulk, if you didn't feel disappointed, there's something wrong with you.
Correct. Absolutely. You wouldn't be human, would you? But I tell you what as well, when you look at some of them, they said Jordan Abdul played well. You know, people say he would look. I tell you what, Jordan Thompson, I like Jordan Thompson. You know, he played very well at Hadley again and this sort of thing. So, yeah, well, what they've done, they've said to Radders, hey, listen, if there's anybody who lacks a bit of form, is anybody who gets injured, then I'm ready to fill their boots and I'll do a job for you and I won't let you down. Simple as that.
Well, there could be one more final for Hull this season. We'll find out in a few weeks' time, of course. But we're talking about Hull, which means we have to talk about you leaving Hull, which means, you know, we played the clip the other week of the woman calling you a traitor if you were back there. How many years is it since you left, and there's still, you know, I guess it's...
It's meaningful. It's meaningful. Yeah, 1987 when I got sold, and so it's 29 years. But it's meaningful. And as I say, I think it was 4 months ago when the Hull played at Wayfair. I was walking through the car park when I was working, doing the radio, and you know, a guy he was about my age, 51. He just said, "Are you all right, Judas?" You know, and I just said to him, "Well, grow up." And like the woman when I went to the KC 2 weeks ago, you know, just calling me a traitor. And you know, the don't forget. Oh no, it's meaningful, and it's purposeful, which is disappointing because, you know, at the end of the day, myself and Lee Crooks didn't want to leave. It was due to financial mismanagement by a board of directors, and they had to sell the two assets, and the two assets were myself and Lee Crooks. But also as well, it's quite interesting, but because when you look at it, Rich, in them days we signed contracts which were incentive contracts, and the average contract was between £20,000 and £25,000. So Lee Crooks' contract was £20,000, and he got £5,000 signing on fee, and then the rest was incentives. A team, first team, Colts, under 24s, Great Britain, and mine, I signed for £22,000, got the £5,000 signing on fee, and then it was all incentives. So Crooks had done his in 12 months and I did mine. So overall, we cost the club, I didn't get my £1,500 playing A team football because I didn't play A team. So overall, my contract were worth £20,500. Lee Crooks, I don't think he played A team as well, so he would have been £18,500. So just say, for instance, it's £40,000 we cost Hull SC, right? 4.5 years I played for Hull. Lee signed in 1980. He left in 87, so 7 years. And in the end, they sold us for £328,000. Not a bad investment. Not a bad investment. No. Not a bad investment, Richie. Right?
Does it upset you when people call you Judas or whatever, traitor or whatever?
It did at first. I can tell you what, when I first went back, when I played for Leeds back at the Boulevard, it was awful. Absolutely awful. And they hated me. They absolutely hated me. And when I first went back, because when you go through the cage at the old Boulevard, then you go up this end and you go onto the pitch. And I didn't really know what to expect. And I knew I was going to get a little bit of stick. But I tell you what, as soon as I arrived on the team bus, I got off the team bus and literally the fans were just waiting and just literally verbal, just literally in my face. It's not like I couldn't do anything about it, just literally just giving it to me. When I walked out, because in them days we didn't warm up, we didn't go out, you know, in them days the warming up situation wasn't like it was nowadays. So when I went out, literally just being spat at, and the Leeds players coming out for the second half, I had to go out by myself because I wouldn't do it. I just got spat and just got covered. Literally all the verbals, you know, what I got from all the fans. And OK, they have a right to express their opinion. But at times, you know, it was very hurtful from there. Because bearing in mind here, it's right, I played for Hull Football Club 122 times and scored 107 tries. So I don't think I did too bad for them, to be honest with you, in that short time in 4.5 years. And then once I got changed, going back onto the team bus, just literally, again, just people just waiting, and just verbal and verbal. And I bet if Mark Wilson listens to this, he'll be there laughing his head off.
He's
and
not, said, but I'll play it to him. It's all right.
If Mark Wilson listens to this, he'll be saying, you should have given him more stick. But yeah, it wasn't very, very nice. And but now it's winning. So it's like that gentleman, I say 4 months ago, that lady a couple of weeks ago at the KC. I just laugh it off, and I just say, well, listen, I didn't want to leave. Lee Crooks didn't want to leave. Unfortunately, it was down to mismanagement of the club directors.
So you've got the move you wanted, the move to Leeds. Well, obviously, you didn't want to leave Hull, but you've joined the team you supported as a boy. What was the feeling? We mentioned the wearing the grey finish shirt for the first time. The first time you wear the blue and amber.
Yep. The old saying, you know, coming home, simple as that. And people ask the question, well, you know, it's a world record fee, 178 grand. Did you feel any pressure? Not at all. I didn't put that transfer fee in my head, so there was no pressure whatsoever. I know what the expectations were. I know, you know, it's like Hull FC, you know, the expectations of a huge club, and the same at Leeds. And then I made my debut. I signed for Leeds on the Thursday, trained on the Saturday. Then we played the touring Auckland side on the Sunday. Scored two tries, took an interception, first try of Gary Freeman, so all the Leeds fans were delighted. Well, I was delighted that I could still do it, to be honest with you, and satisfied, and scored two tries in the first half, but then I got carried off in the second half, and I went over on my ankle, and again, I still laugh at it now, you know, with my debut, and I got carried off, and I'm going down the side of the south stand, and all the south stand are just chanting, cancel that check, cancel that check, he's knackered, I'm only 23, Richie, I'm only 23, and they're just chanting out, cancel the check, cancel the check. But that's the sort of banter, what you get from there, and I say, yeah, the debut went very well, and yeah, just I just made the impression what I wanted to make on the Leeds public.